Padre, na hamnika bada kshayas gautara sata shri shiman. Isi bhakti vedanta swami shila prabhupada ki jai. Ananta koti vaishnavinda ki jai. Namacharya shrila haridas thakur ki jai. Prem shakoho shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhakta Vindikijaya Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kundi Giri Govadam Kijaya Vrindavan Dham Kijaya Yavadvip Dham Kijaya Gangamaya Kijaya Jamunamaya Kijaya Tulsi Devi Kijaya Bhakti Devi Kijaya Samaveda Bhakta Vindikijaya Shri Shri Radha Vrindavan Chandra Kijaya Shri Jagannath Swami ki jai, Shri Baladev Subhadra ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guru. Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 18, verse 65. Manmana bhava mad bhakta madhyatinam namaskuru mami vaishasit satyam te pratijane priyosime. Translation. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Purport by His Divine Grace, Sesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada. The most confidential part of knowledge is that one should become a pure devotee of Krishna and always think of Him and act for Him. One should not become an official meditator. Life should be so molded that one will always have the chance to think of Krishna. One should always act in such a way that all his daily activities are in connection with Krishna. He should arrange his life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours he cannot but think of Krishna. And the Lord's promise is that anyone who is in such pure consciousness will certainly be turned to the Lord of Krishna, where he will be engaged in the association of Krishna face to face. This most confidential part of knowledge is spoken to Arjuna because he is the dear friend of Krishna. Everyone who follows the path of Arjuna can become a dear friend of Krishna and attain the same perfection as Arjuna. These words stress that one should concentrate his mind upon Krishna, the very form of two hands carrying a flute, the bluish boy with the beautiful face and peacock feathers in his hair. There are descriptions of Krishna found in Rama Samhita and other literatures. One should fix his mind on this original form of Godhead, Krishna. One should not even divert his attention to other forms of the Lord. The Lord has multi-forms as Vishnu, Narayana, Rama, Varaha, etc. But a devotee should concentrate his mind on the form that is present before Arjuna. Concentration of the mind on the form of Krishna constitutes the most confidential part of knowledge. And this is disclosed to Arjuna because Arjuna is the most dear friend of Krishna. Always think of me, O my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Om Gyanatana Mandasya. This verse constitutes the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. Some people think Sarva Dharma Pritya Ja, Mayakam Shadanam Bhaja, Aham Tam Sarva Bhapya Vyo Mokshadavishya Masaja is the conclusion. But that's really the symptom of this perfection of knowledge and renunciation. Perfection of life to always remember Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing that we mold our lives in such a way that we cannot but think of Krishna. And actually, due to the all-attractive nature of Krishna and the constitutional position of this jiva soul, the soul cannot but be attracted to Krishna, irresistibly, naturally, spontaneously, inasmuch as iron filings must be attracted to a magnet. But we find that sometimes iron is not attracted to the magnet, and that is because those filings are rusty or dirty or corroded. They're not in their natural position. Something alien, foreign, has covered it. And therefore that attractive potency is not manifest. It's inherent, but it is not active. Lord Sri Krishna spoke the science God, sung it, Bhagavad Gita, the song of God, and the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when Arjuna was perplexed about his duty. And Krishna led up to abandoning all other duties in favor of surrender. And what does surrender mean? Initially it means you stop the fight, you stop the competition with the Lord that the conditioned soul has been engaged in since time immemorial. The subtler aspects of surrender, shadanam, shadanagati, are comprised of humility, dedication of the self, faith that Krishna will surely protect, accepting the Lord as one's only maintainer, embracing all things favorable to devotional service, rejecting all things unfavorable. The youthful son of Nanda Maharaj hears the prayers of those who approach him by this path of Sharanagati. This path of surrender, which we call Krishna consciousness, is meant to soften the heart. The natural condition of the heart is expressed in Srila Rupa Goswami in his prayers in glorification of the holy name. How much nectar those two syllables Krishna must contain. When those syllables dance upon my tongue, I desire millions of tongues. When that nectarian sound enters my ears, I long to have millions of ears. And when it enters into the courtyard of my heart, it conquers over my mind, and all my senses become peaceful, subdued, surrendered. Why is it that when we chant the holy name of Krishna, we're not feeling this longing for millions of years and millions of tongues? We're not feeling the symptoms. Mahaprabhu, in his humility, feeling himself a conditioned soul, longed for it. When will my eyes be decorated with tears of love when I chant your holy name? When will my voice falter, my hair stand on end, my body tremble? When will that day come? He's longing for that perfection. Previously, in his Leela, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nadia one day jumped into the Ganga and went deep down into her current and was frantically rescued by Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur. Pulling him onto the shore, Mahaprabhu realized where he was. He said, "Why have you brought me here? Why have you done this? My Lord, you are about to lose your life." And he replied, "What is the use of my life? I have not developed a love for Krishna." And Srimad Bhagavatam emphatically tells us that whatever we do, if it does not lead to the pleasure of Krishna, which is the only means to love of Krishna, it's useless. Now, we may have different varnas and ashrams, and grihasthas may engage in raising children and business to fund that purpose, but it's meant for the pleasure of Krishna. Grihastha ashram is a path of self-realization in which children are raised and trained to become devotees of Krishna, and the parents attain the supreme perfection of servant of the servant. Mahaprabhu, in his prayers, Shikshastakam, the summary and essence of all his leelas and teachings, Nam nam akadi bahudadi jisavi saktis tatravita niyamita smaranena kala eta drishita kripa bhagavar mama pita daiva minishana hajni naraka. My Lord, dear Lord Krishna, you have endowed your holy name with all your transcendental qualities and all attractive features. My great misfortune, speaking on behalf of all conditioned souls, is that I have no attraction for it. How could the jiva soul fail to feel attraction for the all-attractive name of Krishna, none different from Krishna? The rust, the corrosion, the dirt, the debris, which in our metaphor inhibits the iron being attracted to the magnet, to the conditioned soul is the material desires and the resultant offenses, which according to Srimad Bhagavatam make the heart steel framed. In the second canto, third chapter, after the first two chapters, you know, describing the process of Pashupasana and meditation on the universal form, just to give some framework for the mind to contemplate something spiritual, Sutta Goswami, in the third chapter, entitled A Change in Heart, says that certainly the heart is steel framed. If upon chanting the holy name of the Lord, tears do not well in the eyes, the hair stand on end, the body tremble, the voice falter. And as is often the case in spiritual instruction, the solution is given prior in the preceding verses. Unless one has taken the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotee upon his head, and another element, nearly synonymous, received the fragrance of the tulsi, which adorns the lotus feet of the Lord, Without those two elements in life, his life is no better than that of a corpse. No life. Krishna consciousness is meant to soften the heart. Why? Because a hard heart cannot reveal the inner qualities of the soul inside. When the heart becomes soft, then the subtle and gentle qualities of the soul are able to express themselves, even in our so-called ordinary words, actions, dealings, and relationships. In the Old Testament, which is the scripture of the Mleches, there's a wonderful story about a very devoted shepherd boy named David. And, you know, he would spend his days in the pastures and just sing songs spontaneously in praise of the Lord. And he had accomplished many great feats of heroism as a child, you know, defeating a lion and other virtues. So the king, Solomon, had already developed great faith that this child is in the protection and shelter of the Lord. So, in the very formidable battle with the Philistines, who were very powerful because they had steel armament, which the Hebrews didn't have. They only had bronze weapons. So the Philistines were a very formidable enemy because of their steel armor and armament and swords. And even more so, they had this giant, this colossal warrior named Goliath, who just intimidated everybody so terribly, they were totally terrified to face that army with that giant. So they asked David, you know, you've already defeated the bear and the lion as a child. Do you think you can face this giant? And he said, by the protection and empowerment of the Lord, I can. So the king put his armor on David, and then David said, I can't function in this. It's too stiff. I'm a shepherd. I'm used to being very flexible. And the king already had caught, if you don't want armor, then, you know, just wear your usual shepherd attire. So he took off the armor so he could be very agile. The metaphor, you can appreciate it many ways. It's not a metaphor, it's a story, but it has metaphorical consequences. That the soul, inside a steel frame, which is like armor, he can't manifest his natural propensities of kindness, compassion, love, spontaneous relationships of affection. How to melt that steel-framed heart. The dust of the lotus feet of the devotee of the Lord. The fragrance of the tulsi on the Lord's own lotus feet. What is so essential about these lotus feet of the pure devotee and the Lord? It's the path they tread in the form of their pastimes and their precepts. So to take the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotee upon your head metaphorically means his instructions. Like the dust of the feet coming down, we take upon our heads as the most precious element and factor in life. The conditioned soul, in his impure, contaminated consciousness, cannot approach the all-pure, all-attractive personality of Godhead. It would not be pleasing to the supreme pure to be approached by the limited, perverted efforts of a conditioned soul. Approaching the Lord Developing love for the Lord is solely based on His mercy, which is based on His pleasure. And He's pleased when we humble ourselves to submit to His representative, His ambassador in this world, delegated to do His work of reclaiming conditioned souls. And how is the mercy of that ambassador of Godhead manifest? In His pastimes, and more so, His instructions. That is the dust which we revere by taking it upon our heads. That's the most important element of mind. Sri Krishna instructed Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, culminating in Manmada, Bhava Manmada, always think of it. And those instructions gave Arjuna strength to fight and win against an adversary tremendously more powerful than his own army. By Krishna's grace, he was victorious. But that wasn't the end. That was actually the preparation for what was to follow. Because when Krishna departed this world, he entrusted to Arjuna to evacuate the remaining Jadus, which was primarily the queens of Krishna, and bring them to the mainland, and from there to Hastinapur. And when Arjuna assembled those remaining Jadus on the shore, and then when ominous rumbling of clouds shook the earth, and jagged lightning crisscrossed the darkened sky, and then the ocean began to surge right over the walls of Dwarka, and that great city of Krishna's descended beneath the waves. And in the surging waves and the pounding rain, the Jadu's tears blinded them from seeing the ordeal they were facing. Arjuna, strengthened by Krishna's instruction, remembering them then more than even before, found that that was his only shelter. He contemplated how Krishna had told me that I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent to them. I am covered by that curtain of Yogamaya. And as the surging sea waves swirled around over above the domes of Dwarka, there is no turning back. And the crying, lamenting Jadus were taking shelter of Arjuna, who is himself like an orphan without his beloved friend Krishna. He took shelter, he clung to the instructions of Krishna more than ever before. I will enter through that curtain and obtain the darshan and shelter of my friend once again. With determination, he led that caravan towards Hastinapur. On the way, what Srila Prabhupada describes as a group of infidel cowherd men, they ambushed that caravan. And they grabbed the queens and began to drag them away. And the great hero Arjuna took his Gandiva bow and tried to string it, but his strength was gone. He couldn't even string his bow. He remembered the celestial armament, but he forgot the mantras to call it. And as the queens were pleading to Arjuna for protection, those cowherd men began mocking him and taunting him, as right before the eyes of the great hero. They drug the queens away, which meant to Arjuna that he had failed Krishna in following his instructions. To add insult to injury, when Arjuna reached Hastinapur, the news had preceded him. Everybody already knew. It had been broadcast throughout the land that the great warrior Arjuna has been defeated by a band of coward men. And then he told his brothers, "It is time." And immediately they left for the Himalayas. Draupadi and Subhadra followed in the footsteps of the Pandavas. And as they ascended higher and higher to the peaks of the Himalayas, where vegetation grows so sparse that there's no question of maintaining life, and they were definitely beyond the point of no return. Another verse took prominence in Arjuna's meditation even more than "I never manifest the foolish and unintelligent to them, I'm covered by the curtain of the Guru Maya." Arjuna began contemplating with more focus, with more realization, clinging more tightly and deriving more significance and appreciation from before on this verse. Man mana bhava margvato madhijinam namaskar. Mami vaishyasa satyam te pratijane priyosime. Arjuna was thinking, Krishna said, "I promise you, because you're my dear friend, you will come to me by always remembering me." And then, with deeper appreciation and realization than ever before, even in Krishna's own appreciation, he was thinking, "He just told me to always remember him, and then I would come to him." And as they ascended higher and higher, and the air became thinner and thinner, the vegetation more sparse, there's no turning back at this point. Arjuna was feeling ecstatic. He promised. He called me my very dear friend. You'll come to me simply by remembering me. And as the path became jagged and steep, at a certain point it transmuted into a marble walkway. And in amazement, Arjuna looked, and those jagged peaks of the Himalayas transformed into the golden domes of Aparikata Dwarka. And just for an instant, before his eyes again were blinded with tears, he saw within the window of one of those palaces his dear friend motioning him, "Come, remember, I promised you because you're my very dear friend." Through Arjuna, Krishna is speaking to all of us. So, how to uncover that original, natural, spontaneous attraction to Krishna? The heart must be cleansed. So, today Lord Jagannath has entered into a wonderful series of his pastimes of placing himself in the hands of the descendants of the Shabras, as if he got sick in the draft after taking bath in honor of his appearance in this world from the form of Darabhaman, who replaced Nila Madhava, who was being sought by King Yajurjuna back in the Satya Yuga. Great, powerful emperor of the world, Maharaj Indrajumna. But he declared it in his assembly to be all meaningless and useless, awarding no satisfaction to his heart. And he pleaded with his ministers and subjects, "Can anyone give any indication where I can find fulfillment of heart?" Meaning the darshan of the Lord. And one mystery pilgrim who had wandered into his kingdom stood up in the back of the assembly and said, "My dear king, In my youth, as I wandered the world, I was drawn to the land of Purushottama Chandra, at the heart of which is Neelachal, the Blue Mountain, at the peak of which resides Neelamadava, the sapphire deity, who alone can fulfill all your longings. My dear king, I plead with you to go there, attain his darshan. This is the perfection for which you long. But when his minister Vidyapati went as a scout and actually found the Lord in the care of the Shabaras and also the demigods, Vishwasu, understanding that Vidyapati would go to report his find to the king, became very contemplative because he knew the prophecy that one day Neelamadava would leave the Shabaras. And he would not be actually taken away by Indrajumna, but he would become unmanifest to this world and reappear in the wonderful form of Jagannath. So contemplating that Vidyapati is going to tell the king, but the king will never have darshan of Neelamadava. So Vishwasa was very contemplative. But he decided not to tell because he had faith in the Lord's plan to reveal himself in a more wonderful, more merciful form, which would benefit this world as the most merciful savior in the Kali Yuga. And it's no coincidence that his abode, Jagannath Puri, became the residence of Mahaprabhu, because the festival of Gundicha Marjana and Ratha Yatra, which includes, you know, the whole series beginning today with Snan Yatra and Haribansha, it's all part of the Lord's Leela in this world of reclaiming the conditioned souls. So Mahaprabhu took up residence in Jagannath Puri because the Ratha Yatra festival is like the image of his own heart. And the Gundicha Marjana, which comes up this week, is the manifestation of the internal process of cleansing the heart by chanting the holy names of the Lord. All the dirt and debris of material desire, gross and subtle, all the offenses, all the vanities of pride and ego, the furies of anger and hatred, the envy, the jealousy, the desiring of ill for others, the lack of kindness and compassion for others. These are all kinds of dirt and debris and sand that's irritating to the heart, which is very tender by nature, and displeasing to the Lord, who's so soft and gentle and pure. He wants to live in a suitable environment. Our hearts, but they have to be cleansed and purified and made fragrant by tulsi leaves to attract him to take up his residence, resume his residence there. So, Srila Prabhupada said, God is great, everyone knows. How great is God? It's not such common knowledge. It's more confidential knowledge, which is found in Bhagavad Gita. How the Lord places himself in the care, in the hands of his devotees, as he does now, after Snan Yatra, on pretext of becoming ill, placing himself in the care of the descendants of the Shabras, who are tribals from the forest, not qualified by the purificatory rites of Vedic culture to worship the deity. But Lord Jagannath is most merciful. And even when Ramanujacharya was in Jagannath Puri, it's seen these Taittavatis, the way they worship Lord Jagannath, they're not following Pansarakta Vidhi. He was appalled and began instructing them. And Lord Jagannath threw him all the way to Kurukshetra after instructing him that I like the way they serve me. Their spontaneous devotion. Don't instruct them in Pansarakta Vidhi. He threw him all the way to Kurukshetra. The Lord loves to place himself in the care of his devotees, in the hands of his servants. When the great son of a sage and devotee, Akrura, was ordered by Kamsa to go to Braj and bring Krishna, tell Nanda it's a festival. He should come with his sons. But Akrura knew the ill motives of his unworthy master, King Kamsa. So as the son of a sage, understanding the ramifications of displeasing the devotees, what to speak of the Brijavasis, he knew, if I take Krishna out of their midst, they will be displeased with me, and this will wreak havoc in my spiritual life, which it did, as you see in the whole controversy about the Shamataka jewel later on in Dwarka. So he knew this. But he was contemplating, even though he feared the consequences of his action, that on the other hand, the lives of Vasudeva and Devaki, and specifically, and the Jadus in general, are in jeopardy. Vasudeva and Devaki are in prison being tortured by Kamsa. The rest of the Jadus are in jeopardy. And as the servant of Krishna, his will is the most important thing, even though that is a thankless task for me to fulfill, so be it. Absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, he did not see any of the scenery on his sojourn from Mathura to Vrindavan. But when the fragrance of the lotus footprints of the Lord reached his nostrils, and he awoke as if from a dream to see those lotus footprints on the ground, and he spontaneously fell off his chariot and rolled in the dust of those lotus footprints, and looked about, he was as if he had just wakened from a dream and found himself in paradise at the foot of the great Nandishwar Hill, with the simple but beautiful residences of the Gopas leading up to the palace of Nanda Maharaj. And when Krishna and Balaram saw Akrura, they so lovingly took him by the hand, calling him uncle, please come for dinner. And they treated him, they honored Akrura as a distinguished guest in their house. And when they asked about news of their relatives, and Akrura explained Kamsa's enmity towards Vasudeva and Devaki, Krishna just fumed and flushed in anger. And then Akrura said, and furthermore, this invitation to the festival of Mathura is Kamsa's plan to kill you, Balaram. And Balaram said, how is he going to kill me? And Akrura said, by his wrestlers. Wrestlers? No, they're big, powerful wrestlers. And Balaram said, big, fat wrestlers are going to kill me? And how is he going to kill Krishna? More big, fat wrestlers? And then Krishna and Balaram started laughing so hard they had to hold their stomachs. Big, fat. And he also has a mad elephant. And then Krishna and Balaram looked at Akrura with wide eyes and simultaneously said, a big, mad elephant? Wide-eyed. They were contemplating, what is our fate to be? Hearing this, the gopas became so terrified that their turbans faded and their complexions paled, And everything in Brudge, the stones, the rocks, the logs, the trees, they all began to cry. And when they cried so many tears they became dry, they just cracked. And the Jamuna was overflowing from the surge of tears of all the lamenting Brijabasis that Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. But Mother Yashoda, she could not comprehend this message at all. Go? Go where? And then when Nanda explained to her over and over, and she started to register that Akura is here to take Krishna to Mathura, in disbelief, she went into shock. And then she became frantic. She grabbed Krishna. She hid him behind the curtain. No, that's not good. She hid him behind the closet. No. Then she hid him behind the altar, behind the deity of Varaha. She was hiding Krishna. And she made a vow that she would stop the sunrise from happening the next day. And then, when Nanda Maharaj assured her, but the cowherd boys and myself are going with Krishna, we'll be sure he comes back, she was somewhat appeased. But when the gopis heard the news, they could not be appeased. And they were contemplating how ironic it is that this messenger of fate, the cruelest person to take Krishna out of our lives, is named Akura, which means not cruel. He's the most cruel. How ironic is fate? And that night, the moon refused to rise, and the stars fell from the sky, and all the beautiful songs and sounds of Braj were replaced by cries of anguish. And at that time, it was spring. The most tender-hearted feminine counterpart of the Lord, Srimati Radharani, had just returned to her parents' home. And in the palace of King Vrishabhanu, dressed in a simple white sari, she was accompanied by her assistants in preparing such a nice meal for Krishna. And those most tasty dishes were her anubhavas in manifest form, the affections of her heart in the form of the most palatable offerings to Krishna, all arranged very artistically on a tray to be sent to Nandagram. After she finished cooking, her sakis and manjaris bathed her and dressed her in a beautiful crimson sari with nice jewels and garlands and braided her hair. And she sat down very lovingly beside her beloved father, King Rishabhanu. And then he stood up and announced in this assembly hall that tomorrow Nanda Maharaj will take Krishna and Balaram to Mathura. And she stood up in disbelief and fainted, to be ushered into her room by her friends, who massaged her hands and feet to bring her back to consciousness, which they were reluctant to do because she would find more peace in an unconscious state. When she came to, she found the Lita and Vishaka like painted statues at her side, stunned in disbelief. And the Sakya's concern was as much for Srimati Radharani as it was for Krishna, because they have equal affection for the divine couple. But the Manjari's wife was Srimati Radharani. And their sentiments for her excelled their affection for Krishna. So understanding the calamity, Krishna expanded himself and appeared to the gopis and explained to Srimati Radharani that we have descended to this world by Brahma's request to annihilate the demons. And now the call of duty is taking me to those pastimes. And she said to Krishna, go. Go ahead. But don't expect to find me living here when you return. I said, what do you mean? And she said, and this is what Mahaprabhu is echoing in his
various statements and prayers,
that without you, Krishna, separated from my life and soul, I cannot possibly live. And then Krishna assured her that every day, by the grace of Lord Narayan, I will return and enjoy pastimes with you. She said, if you don't, I will surely die. And Krishna gave his solemn vow, I swear upon each and every cow, I will come back. And with that vow, they had hope and assurance, he'll be back. And they were pacified. So, what are the indications? What are the symptoms of softness of heart? The melting of the steel frame, which enables the soul to express itself, even beginning in the conditioned state. Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas are very critical of those who imitate ecstatic symptoms. And even the great Acharyas, like Srila Prabhupada, they suppress those ecstatic symptoms even when they became overpowering, so as not to create social disturbance. The ecstatic symptoms we listed, the astasatagavavas, preliminary to prema. But our Acharyas have encouraged us to recognize and appreciate the standard symptoms of a softening heart in the form of eagerness to hear the pastimes of the Lord, enthusiasm to broadcast the glories of the Lord, eagerness to please the servants of the servants, humility. And Srila Prabhupada adds to the list kindness, friendliness to all living entities. And whatever we do, we should know that it is only Krishna's pleasure that allows his love to soften our hearts from within. But how can we attract Krishna? Lord Chaitanya told Sanatana Goswami that the only quality that it can attract the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead to the insignificant jiva is humility. And we should know that whatever we do for Krishna's pleasure, it is humility alone that gives it flavor, which is pleasing to Krishna. However expertly we may dress the deities, the Lord will not reveal himself unless that service is endowed with humility. However expertly we may cook for Krishna's pleasure, it will not be attractive to him if not flavored with humility. However eloquently we may speak his message, it will not be empowered if not endowed with humility. So, how to attain that humility, which is so alien to the conditioned nature of the conditioned soul? The dust of the lotus feet of the devotees of the Lord. Their instructions, taking them reverentially as the most important aspect of our lives. And what are the instructions? The Acharyas to chant Hare Krishna in the mood of the servant, desiring to please the servants. Then following those instructions, it's not that we just hear the instructions like a student, but a disciple is one who is disciplined to follow the instructions in a mood pleasing to the Master. And as Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, his son, by the grace of the spiritual master, we attain the favor of Krishna. When Gurudev is pleased, Krishna is satisfied. And then from within the heart, Shringata Swakata Krishna Panishravana Kirtanaha Vedantastohya Bhadrani Vidaroti Saritsitam. Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Super Soul who resides in the hearts of every living entity, he himself, from within, takes up the process of cleansing all the dirt when we take pleasure in hearing his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and sung. But how can we take pleasure in the message in the name of Godhead when our conditioned state contaminates our pure senses, making the immortal nectar taste bitter? Krishna helps. The potency, the dust of the feet of the devotees is revealed wonderfully. On the island of Koladweep, in Navadweep Dham, Navadweep Dham, every island represents one of the nine processes of devotional service. Koladweep is Padasevana, serving the lotus feet. On that island was an academy of one very pukka Brahman who was self-controlled, very pious, very clean, and he only studied and taught Srimad Bhagavatam, understanding that to be the crest jewel of all scriptures. But he was a smart man. His emphasis was on jnana and vairagya more than bhakti. And when Srivas Thakur wandered into his academy and heard the words of Srimad Bhagavatam and manifest ecstatic symptoms, Devananda Pandit's disciples threw him out. And Devananda did not object. And that was an offense. For which, when Mahaprabhu passed by his ashram, he said, "Who is this rascal that dares to teach the Srimad Bhagavatam but disrespects the person Bhagavat? I will tear his manuscripts to shreds. Just watch." And the devotees had to restrain him in his anger. Sometime thereafter, Vikreshwar Pandit, who was the combined incarnation of Aniruddha and Sashireka, Srimati Radharani's dear associate, by chance came to his ashram. And when Devananda Pandit saw the Vikreshwar dance in kirtan, both gods and demons were mesmerized. And spontaneously a service attitude arose in his heart, and he took a stick and held the crowds back from infringing on the graceful divine dance of Vikreshwar Pandit. And Vikreshwar Pandit fell down in ecstasy. Devananda Pandit took him in his lap. And then he took the dust from his lotus feet and placed it upon his head. And by dint of that act, he could understand, "I committed a great offense when I allowed my disciples to throw Srivas Pandit out of my ashram." And he repented bitterly. Years later, Mahaprabhu left Jagannath Puri. He told the devotees, this is just after he came to Paramananda Puri's well. No, I came to Paramahansa's monastery, and he asked him, how's the water in your well? He said, it stinks. It's nasty. Can't even drink it. And Mahaprabhu said, how could Lord Jagannath be such a miser to prevent the devotees from receiving the nectar from your well? And then Mahaprabhu prayed that Ganga Devi would enter that well. The next day the well was overflowing with crystal clear, pure, sweet water. And then Mahaprabhu said, I want to go visit the Ganga in Navadvipa. And he made his journey back to his homeland about a decade after leaving there to take sannyas. During the time he was gone, those who had offended him, those who had neglected him, those who had not appreciated his glories were by the fire of separation, realizing the Lord appeared in our midst and we neglected him, and they were very repentant. And when he appeared in the house of Vidyavachaspati, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's brother, huge crowds, he told Vidyavachaspati, don't tell anybody I'm here. He said, I won't. But how can you keep the sun under a basket? Word got out. Nimaya is back. He's back in Vidyanagar. And huge crowds, millions of people were running. They came to the ferry boat landings. Thousands of people jumped in every boat. The boats splintered. And somehow the people got across and converged in the house of Vidyavachaspati. And the Lord came out and raised his lotus arms and chanted Hari Bol, Hari Nam Sankirtan ensued. After which, one after another, they came and said, they confessed their different offenses. And one Brahmana said, not understanding the glories of your devotees, I criticized them. What atonement do you prescribe? And he said, millions of atonements will not counteract the bitter fruit of blaspheming devotees, which is like poison, which destroys your spiritual life. But if with the same mouth you took that poison, which is killing you, if you ingest ambrosia, that will purify the poison and make you immortal. The ambrosia is the glorification of the devotees, which must accompany the chanting of the holy name. And then Mahaprabhu went back into the house and disappeared. And the crowds were banging on the door, where is he? Let us have his darshan. Vidyavachaspati was devastated because the Lord had left. And then the crowd started criticizing him. You're hiding it. You're so selfish. You're not sharing. But then word came, he's in Koladwi, in the ashram of Devananda. And when the crowd reversed and ran the other direction, the millions upon millions increased millions fold. And when Mahaprabhu looked out, there was no Ganges, there was no fields, there was no houses, just like a sea of heads. And everyone begging for his mercy. And when Devananda Pandit confessed to the Lord that I've committed offense, how can I atone? He said, you must understand the glories of Akrasura Pandit. Krishna has made his residence in his heart. When he dances, Krishna dances. His presence purifies the atmosphere. The dust of his lotus feet awakens pure devotional malice. And by the dust of the lotus feet of that devotee, the Krishna Pandit upon his head, Devananda Pandit developed faith in Mahaprabhu which he never had before. From that faith in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he inquired, how should I teach and understand Srimad Bhagavatam? He said, only in relation to bhakti. Every word means and is rich with only bhakti. No other concept taints its holy pages. And when you teach, teach only bhakti through the pages and the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. He followed that instruction. But that instruction had twofold meaning. There's two types of Bhagavat. There's the book, which tells us about Krishna. And there's the person who follows the instructions of Krishna. Both are Bhagavat. Both are essential. Because the book Bhagavat has somewhat of a passive role in the way it instructs us and teaches us. The devotee is the active agent of Bhagavan in our lives to teach us and guide us on the path back to home. And that path, which leads to the dust of Vrindavan, that dust is carried by the lotus feet of the pure devotees. It symbolizes the path, and it manifests itself in the form of their instructions, which teaches how to follow Krishna's words in this verse, how to always think of Krishna. We always think of that which we have affection for. Mahaprabhu came to teach us further how to always think of Krishna by developing love for Krishna, by always chanting the holy name of Krishna and acting with a humble service attitude to please the devotees, to achieve Guru's favor and Krishna's blessings in the fulfillment and perfection of life, which is loving Krishna. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Well, as a shepherd boy, he was used to, you know, dancing about the pasturing grounds, very agile and flexible. To him, armor was curtailing the freedom and agility he would need, because he wasn't a kshatriya. It was against his nature to put on armor. He's a shepherd, not a kshatriya. But getting back to the original metaphor, the hard heart, the steel frame, impedes the nature of the soul expressing itself in our, even in our conditioned state. I'll tell you another story. Abraham Lincoln had an advisor who told him, because he saw Abe Lincoln was inclined to, you know, accept the service of one candidate into his government. And his advisor Abe was not inclined to accept this person, which his advisor wanted him to accept. And he said, why don't you want to accept this person into your service? He said, I don't like the way it looks. So the minister said, Mr. President, a man cannot help the way he looks. He said, yes, he can. Because our thoughts affect our countenance. Holy thoughts create a soft, gentle countenance, demeanor, and temperament and personality. Whereas vicious thoughts harden. Soft, gentle heart is able to express the nature of the soul within it, whereas the hard coverings of envy, enmity, jealousy, cynicisms, criticisms, desiring the worst for others, make such hard layers. They're not flexible,
the soul cannot express itself through such hard layers of heart. And you see with devotees, as they advance in Krishna consciousness, developing true humility, compassion, and love for Krishna, more and more the qualities of the soul begin to reveal themselves in their behavior, their words, and their lives, even in the clearing state of consciousness. So it's just all a matter of melting the steel frame and softening the heart, making it pliable like butter, so that Krishna steals it away. Hunters, farmers, forest people. They weren't formidable. They weren't formidable. Yeah. This is not to be imitated. Spontaneous service arises after the perfection of following the rules and regulations. And even when we think we're beginning to become spontaneous, all our thoughts and deeds must be blessed and guided by the Vaishnavas and Guru. Otherwise, too liable to convince ourselves that we're on the spontaneous platform and we're just becoming independent and doing what we want. The false ego is very able to deceive the conditioned soul into thinking that he's doing something virtuous and he's actually regressing in spiritual life. So the blessings and the confirmation of the great souls must always be our shelter, protection, and guidance, even in the advanced stages. But it's by properly and perfectly following the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti that gradually, the spontaneous nature of loving devotion begins to manifest in the soul, through the soul. Thank you very much, O Gauri Sishila Prabhupada.